This is Football Friday with Monty in the Morning. Need the info so you can turn your money into more money?
Money.
NFL and NCAA locks are coming up.
Make money.
Football Friday has you covered. Now, here's Monty.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It is the Monty Show presented by Arrowhead BMW. ArrowheadBMW.com right off the 101 freeway in good old Glendale, Arizona at the Beardsley Union Hills exit. As well, we are presented by Napa Auto Parts across this wonderful state of Arizona, specifically Glendale, Peoria, El Mirage, Bell Road in Phoenix, and the Scottsdale Air Park. Make sure you find them on Yelp, where they've got a great coupon for you.
Be a Yelper.
Be a Yelper, yo. Boy, I'm excited. This is a week, and if you are a gambling man, and I'm not saying I am, because based on my win percentage in the NFL, it's not spectacular, although I will say I've done quite well in college this year. But if you are a gambling man, there are some lines this week that should terrify you. The first one I want to talk about, Miami at Buffalo. Buffalo's a 17-point home favorite. Wait a minute. The Buffalo Bills are a 17-point home favorite.
How does that even happen?
I don't know.
How does that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. When was the last time the Buffalo Bills were a 17-point home favorite? We will certainly talk about that on the show today. We're going to do Cardinals, Giants, Saints, Bears. Philly and Dallas, I think, is one of the most difficult games of the week to call, and this comes back down to, do you believe in Dak Prescott? You know, do you think that Dak Prescott can win you a close game? I think there's absolutely that to talk about. Is Kalani Sitake at BYU coaching for his life? At BYU, Boise is a 7-point favorite going to Lavelle Edwards Stadium, which is just a shocking development. Huge Pac-12 this week, ASU, Utah, Oregon at Washington, and then Arizona at SC. You realize the number, the over-under in the Arizona-SC game is 67. 67, and yes, I'm taking the over. I'm absolutely taking the over in that game. By the way, I think we have to start with Patrick Mahomes. And the injury that happened last night, if you didn't see it, Patrick Mahomes dislocated his kneecap. That sounds comfortable.
Really, right? Comfortable, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You don't need your kneecap, I don't think. But Patrick Mahomes dislocates his kneecap, and they pop it back in on the field. That looked comfortable, you know, which looked terrible, by the way.
Yeah.
They say that this is the best-case scenario for this injury. They say the kneecap is intact. It's not fractured or broken. And they're looking at a three-week turnaround here for Patrick Mahomes. Just your thoughts on the importance of it. Obviously, Denver sucks.
Right.
John Elway's an embarrassment, by the way he has drafted and tried to develop quarterbacks. Joe Flacco's been a complete failure in Denver. That team's just not very good. Why they have not traded Von Miller, I don't know. But this Patrick Mahomes thing, this is a big deal, man. And he is, I think, the most, or maybe one of the most, if not the most enjoyable player to watch.
Yeah, we were just having a great debate yesterday about like who was the best quarterback in the league. And, you know, we were talking about Russell Wilson and why he's so exciting and his abilities. You know, I don't think anybody doubts that Patrick Mahomes is as good or if not better. I mean, he's one of the best we have in the NFL. And it's interesting, you know, I thought it was prototypical, like it was standard procedure after the game for everybody to say, well, this is why you don't quarterback sneak. This is why you don't put your quarterback at the bottom of the pile.
Which, by the way, I totally agree with it.
But you might agree with it, but at the end of the day, we all would have made that call in that moment. I'm telling you right now, you don't, and you're a guy who has beaten me over the head about Kyler Murray. You don't play not to get hurt. You don't play not to get hurt with your quarterback. This is the same thing. Like I don't, like, just because he got rolled up in one pile doesn't mean it's going to consistently happen. So,
but I don't think that you want over 1,000 pounds of humanity laying on top of Patrick Mahomes for really an unnecessary reason. If you're going to quarterback sneak it, just hand it off. If you can't get a yard in the NFL running the football, that's a you problem. Patrick Mahomes is your MVP. There's no question about that. I think he is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, no question. And I think when you look at their schedule, they're home for the Packers and the Vikings at the Titans are the three games that he could potentially miss.
Yeah.
So you're probably not beating the Packers and the Vikings with Matt Moore, I would guess. The Titans, yeah. I don't know what to make of the Titans with the quarterback change. We'll see what Ryan Tannehill's like, but they've got some tough competition. Luckily, they'll be at home here, but you're telling me it was worth Patrick Mahomes to quarterback sneak. That's my least favorite play with quarterbacks, is a quarterback sneak. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say that I just think we can't, I think it's unfair to ask the question like that, and you know, after the situation, it's you know, the quarterback sneak is a play that, you know, like look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's done it a gazillion times and not gotten hurt. This was, in my opinion, this was just a bad luck of the draw on this particular play.
It was.
And I agree that it's totally unfortunate that he got hurt, and you know, that it was a knee thing, and now that's probably going to be in his head a little bit when he's running. Maybe, you know, I mean, those are all things you deal with as an athlete. But yeah. But I think in the end of the day, you are right that if you can't run for a yard in the NFL, you're probably doing something wrong. But the quarterback sneak is the most guaranteed way to get a yard in this league. So I understand why he called it. So, you know, I guess I'm not a big fan of saying, well, like looking back, hindsight is 20/20, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the injury thing with quarterbacks is different than you cannot play not to get hurt. But I also don't think you need to run Patrick Mahomes into the A-gap. If you want to run him outside or roll him out of the pocket, I'm good with that. Like Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray has to run for this offense to be effective.
Right.
He's not a guy who can stand in the pocket and deliver the football and have that be his only ability to impact the defense, because that's not going to win them games. I don't know, man. I guess we can look at this differently, and clearly we do. I just don't believe that that's their whole world, Patrick Mahomes.
Very true.
In Kansas City. So I worry about that. But, you know, they handled Denver quite well. John Elway's a complete failure.
Yeah.
And if we're truth-telling, John Elway's a complete failure. And it is, in my mind, he is only there because he is John Elway. Any other general manager at this point would have gotten whacked. If we're being totally honest about it. Any other quarterback or any other general manager that's had Brock Osweiler, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Case Keenum, and now Joe Flacco would have gotten whacked. And if you'd have been 13-26 since 2007, you would have gotten whacked already.
Let's not forget about Steve Keim and his ability to keep his job.
Well, yeah, but at least Steve Keim has won. Right. If you look at the Bruce Arians year and the 13-3 year, you had a season where you could hang on to.
Yeah.
You can't say that about it in the recent times. And obviously, John Elway's got a Super Bowl, the Peyton Manning trade.
Tebow's probably the last, like, really, like, I mean, I know Peyton went to a Super Bowl and everything, but Tebow was like one of the most exciting times in recent.
Yeah, and again, the trade to get Peyton Manning, the move to get Peyton Manning was totally ballsy. I understand that, and I know they won a Super Bowl. He's been nothing short of incompetent with the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Because they've had really good defenses. They've got talented players on the outside. They've got Philip Lindsay and Devontae Booker, and like, they have depth at running back. But they have a mediocre offensive line. You have quarterbacks that just simply are not functional NFL quarterbacks. And by the way, he's the guy who tried to trade for Colin Kaepernick and won't sign him and bring him in. And I don't understand, what else do you have to do? If you are John Elway, I don't know how much more you can screw up.
Well, it's kind of
the quarterback position in Denver.
Yeah, you're totally right, and it's kind of amazing that he's screwing it up this bad, considering he was a quarterback and he understands what it takes to play the position. And it's funny, we kind of talked about this earlier in the week, that, you know, just because you are a great player doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be a great coach.
That's
David
right.
Ross. That doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be a great executive, Michael Jordan. That doesn't, you know, mean that you'll be great when it comes to people ops, evaluating talent, teaching somebody a new skill. I don't think people understand just how difficult and how much of an art it is to actually teach somebody a skill that they don't know anything about. Like, literally, like, it's almost like teaching them a new language. And not everybody has the ability to do that. And so You're totally right. How are you supposed to do anything in this league if you don't have a good enough quarterback to get it done?
It's the Denver Broncos. It's frustrating because it's the Denver Broncos.
Right.
I feel like they should be better than this. I mean, but then again, if you turn your attention here to Arizona and the Cardinals, this Patrick Peterson situation this week has been nothing short of embarrassing, in my opinion. Like, the way this organization has gone out of their way to kiss Patrick Peterson's ass is, I mean, this is next level butt kissing. This is next level shining of a turd like we have not seen in some time. And if you don't know the story, Patrick Peterson is returning this week after a six-week drug suspension. He failed a performance-enhancing drug test. He last year demanded a trade, essentially quit on the team. Then, you know, comes out and says, I want to be here. I'm a Cardinal for life. And immediately after that, and probably at the time he said that at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, he already knew he failed that test when he said that.
Definitely he did.
Like,
yes.
He was a fraud. The Patrick Peterson's a fraud.
Yeah.
There's no other way around that. So he serves his suspension, and now this week you've got all the paid by the Cardinal writers writing about how he's a great leader and he's come back and he's now mentoring these young guys. And it's like, dude, get out of here. This is a guy who, again, destroyed your locker room last year, usurped the authority of the head coach, who you eventually fired, was terrible on the field, mind you. And now you're saying that, A, yes, he's back. B, we're not going to trade him. There is a ton of trade demand for Patrick Peterson. By all accounts, they've gotten multiple calls on Patrick Peterson.
As many as seven teams reaching out.
But yet you're going to stick with this guy and you're going to be loyal to this guy. And you are going to talk about what a great teammate he is. Like, what part of Patrick Peterson's behavior says he's a great teammate?
Yeah, well, this is classic Arizona Cardinal behavior, right? They choose not to see the negative in the reality, and they choose to live in this, this kind of fairy tale or wonderland of sorts of like, oh, man, P2's a great guy. Like, yeah, like, he's still playing good on the field. Hey, but you know, he's coming back from a drug suspension, right? So you probably shouldn't really be celebrating this guy right now. Yeah, but that doesn't really matter. He's great on the field, right? Like, that's what they do, right? You did it with the Carson Palmer situation when you put him in the Ring of Honor. Oh, put Carson in the Ring of Honor, even though Carson didn't do a damn thing to earn that by anybody's standard, and it wasn't just my own. When we heard that on the show, the first thing I said was, this is a PR stunt. He hasn't done nearly enough to get in. And then it was like, I don't know what, like 5 hours later that like everybody under the sun like started kind of just this melting pot of opinions how he hadn't done enough. So yep. I just feel like Michael Bidwell and the Arizona Cardinals choose, one, not to talk about negative things like Steve Keim off the field, like Miniger off the field, like P2 off the field, one. Number two, I think they don't prioritize winning enough, because if they did that, Steve Keim wouldn't
be here.
You can say
that again, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I just think there's a number of problems in the organization, and P2 might be one of the best examples, or the handling of P2 coming back might be one of the best examples of them just blatantly choosing to stick super, super positive and not in reality.
Yeah, I think it is incredible that they have just overlooked that. Now, having said that, you can't help but think that he's an upgrade. If he was playing week one against Detroit, they probably win that game because Tremaine Brock, you'll remember, dropped an interception that would have won them. That would have won them the game. P2, or I would guess Byron Murphy makes that play, right?
Yes.
So does this make them better? Yes. Patrick Peterson is absolutely an upgrade on the football field for the Arizona Cardinals. That does not mean that he's a guy that you should keep and eventually give a contract extension to. Because I think that's just the absolute wrong way to go about it.
Well, you know what the conversation is going to be, because again, and I agree that they're basically saying they're not going to trade this guy. And you know what the conversation is going to be 3 years from now when he doesn't have value and they're trying to trade him. It's like, well, hey, you had seven teams reaching out in 2019. Why didn't you trade him? And that was right after he was coming back from the suspension.
Because he's a leader and come on. It is what this is. Who the Cardinals are,
yeah.
I don't think there's any way to beat around that bush. Now, having talked about that, I'm really excited about Kyler Murray.
Right.
I know that there has been a lot of negative around Kyler Murray, but I think when you look at what Kyler Murray's done for this team, and you look at the fact that Kyler was one of the more controversial first round picks, and the Josh Rosen trade and all of the things that went into that and all the conversations that went into that, the rough start that they got off to. Kyler Murray, week in and week out, has gotten better. He has become more of a field general. He is clearly a leader. He is clearly a guy that his teammates respect. I think, you know, when we saw the mic'd up video from NFL.com and you saw all of the accolades and the relationship that clearly exists between A, Kyler and his teammates, but Kyler and Cliff Kingsbury, I think there is, without question now, Kyler Murray has validated his selection as the number one pick. He has silenced all the critics who said that Steve Keim's incompetent for the way that he is handling Josh Rosen. And is he? Yeah, sure. Steve Keim, I think, botched the Josh Rosen trade. But if he got one thing right, it was hiring Cliff Kingsbury and drafting Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray is fun to watch. I think he's a reason for fans to buy tickets. I think he sells jerseys. I think Kyler Murray is a reason to put this team in a primetime game. Now, I'm not saying to do that this year, but if they wind up winning four or five games this year, I could easily see the Arizona Cardinals getting a Sunday night or a Monday night assignment next year just for Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. And if nothing else happens right for them, that validates the selection of Kyler Murray. And they're going to New York this week. And it is a little surprising the Giants are a three-point home favorite, because I think the Arizona Cardinals are better than the New York Giants. And I think they deserve to be a road favorite in this game. They're not, and I totally understand that, hey, you give the home team 3 points in Vegas. I get that. The Arizona Cardinals have played well enough over the last couple of weeks to deserve. They've earned the right to be a road favorite here. They're better than a pick'em against the New York Giants. And I feel very good that Kyler Murray's going to be able to operate. I can say with confidence that if the Arizona Cardinals lose this game on Sunday, it will not be because of Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is what's right with the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray is what is exciting about the Arizona Cardinals. And we can sit here and we can talk about a mediocre offensive line. We can talk storylines about how Marcus Golden's having a resurgent return for the New York Giants. And James Betcher is the former Arizona Cardinal D coordinator, is now the D coordinator in New York. And he's got his former star Cardinal pupil. That's all well and good. Kyler Murray will be the story of this game. And if the Cardinals win, it will be because of Kyler Murray. And to me, that is validating of him being the number one pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, there's no secret that he's saving jobs, right? I mean, that's just it is what it is.
Great
I mean,
point.
You know, it's him and Byron Murphy, as I was saying. Those two picks by Steve Keim may very well keep him in his job. Now, listen, to be clear, I wouldn't have had Steve Keim here, 7 years ago or 3 years ago, whatever. He'd have been gone already. His ass would have been way out of here by now, right? But he's still here, and he's still having to try and do a good enough job in the draft to justify keeping him. And I think this particular draft, he did a decent job. So with that said, I agree with you. I don't think the Giants are going to be able to keep contain on Kyler Murray. I do think he's going to find a way to shred them for a couple first downs. And I do think it's becoming more and more clear by watching Kyler that he is becoming more comfortable running the football after he's gone through his progression and sneaking out.
Yes.
So, you know, I think if he's going to continue to do that and he can do it at a high level and not get hurt, I think they're going to be in great shape. But again, I just want to emphasize, before this team can do, like, make any noise, like become a postseason contender, get to the postseason, that offensive line has to be upgraded. Once that happens, I think then they're truly cooking with gas.
Well, and the other thing, when we talk about Steve Keim's job and, you know, validating the whole Kyler Murray selection, I think the hiring of Cliff Kingsbury is another reason that Steve Keim's going to keep his job. Because watching the mic'd up, and if you didn't see it, it's on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. The mic'd up feature that NFL.com is putting out, Cliff Kingsbury, I think, is doing a great job of staying positive in his worst moments. And there have been bad moments. Let's not kid ourselves. Some of the turnovers, some of the defensive lapses, and all along, all through those bad times, the valleys of this season so far, Cliff Kingsbury has stayed remarkably positive. His message has not changed. We're going to get him next time. We're on the verge of winning this game. Keep going. Keep performing. I mean, all of these things that Cliff Kingsbury's doing for this football team have validated him as the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And yeah, I think Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury have saved Steve Keim's job. And if you're a Cardinal fan, excuse me, if you're a Cardinal fan, I don't know that that's a good thing. But what this tells me now is that this team is going to spend lavishly on the offensive line, whether that's draft picks, whether that's free agent money. You know, Max Garcia is back practicing for the Cardinals this week. So there's a chance that he will, you know, be a return designee because they certainly could use him on the offensive line.
No doubt.
But I don't think there's any question they are going to invest capital and money in the offensive line.
Yeah, and I think I was looking at mock drafts the other day for this upcoming draft, the 2020 draft.
Yep.
And I want to say, what are they, 6 or 7 overall? That's what they're projected to be. So
there's one that's got them picking 14th.
Yeah, you know, so they're not necessarily going to have a top five pick. And I think that's a good thing. You don't necessarily want to be top five every single year, right? If you're top five every single year, that's terrible for your organization. So I think the lower they go in the draft as a Cardinal fan, that's good for you as far as what the team is doing. But
sure.
But you're absolutely right. The offensive line has to be prioritized. And if it's not this year, I don't know when it will be.
Yeah, and I don't know that you want to draft like Andrew Thomas from Georgia is probably the best offensive tackle in the draft. Do you take a risk if you're the Cardinals and draft offensive line, or do you buy a known commodity?
Well,
to me, it's an interesting conundrum, especially with the way that, you know, you've played A.Q. Shipley this year. I think you've wasted a year of development so far on Mason Cole, not being your starter there. So I think there's a lot of interesting talking points, and this is not a great football team. I totally understand that, but they're going to win 3 games in a row come Sunday against the New York Giants. And I know the Giants are a 3-point favorite. The number in that game is 50.5. I think the Cardinals are going to win 28-20. I think this is a win on the road. It goes under the 50.5 at 48. But I love the Cardinals to win this game. Whether or not Saquon Barkley plays, I think they're going to win. I think Sterling Shepard being out for the Giants is a big, big deal. He's a significant weapon. He's their leading receiver, even though he's missed the last couple of weeks. Like, I think everything is set up for the Arizona Cardinals to go to New York and beat the Giants.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I am going to, for the first time this year, I am going to take them to win.
Welcome aboard the Cardinal train.
It's less about the Cardinal train and more about the derailed Giants train. I'm going to take the Cardinals. For some reason, 30 points for them in this game feels good to me. So I would anywhere between 28 and 31 is where I see them landing in this game. I do think Kyle is going to have a good day, and it's mainly because, again, they're not going to be able to control him. They're not going to be able to mitigate him, floating out of the pocket after the progression has happened. So again, 31 points, for the Cardinals. I think you're looking at anywhere between, 20 and 24 for the Giants.
Yeah, I'm going to go 28-20. Cardinals will win this game. That's a win in and under. I think the Cardinals are going to win 3 in a row. I don't know where their next win comes after that because the schedule gets remarkably more difficult at this point.
Well, there'll be moral victories for sure.
Okay, now you're being a jerk. but I do think that the Cardinals are moving in the right direction, and I'm really surprised to say that considering that you're 2-3-1. And you've beaten the Falcons and the Bengals, and now you're going to beat the Giants, but now you got to go to the Saints. Then you got to turn around and play the 49ers and then the Bucs. And I mean, there's just this real difficult turn.
This team's capable of beating the Bucs for sure.
Yeah. In Tampa, I don't know about that. They run the ball well. And when Jameis Winston is playing well, and I can't believe I'm even going to say it, but the way that Jameis Winston has showed flashes of competence under Bruce Arians. Now he also has 5 interceptions in a game and a fumble. Okay, that's probably not good. But there's a lot of wonderment about whether or not that team is functional.
Right.
And I think Tampa at home, it's awfully difficult to pick against them. Let's get Saints and Bears here on the Monty Show, presented by Arrowhead BMW, arrowheadbmw.com. It is a different way of buying a car at Arrowhead BMW, and you can see for yourself Saturday, October 26th. And frankly, it's the last Saturday of every month. We are at Arrowhead BMW for Cars and Coffee. It's trunk or treat this month. See, Jake, it's Halloween month.
Yeah, catless, trunk you know. Or treat. Show up, bring candy, specifically white chocolate Reese's. I will have a donation box. Thanks.
Thanks. You're welcome. But it's going to be a great time. We're going to have raffles, obviously. Mike from Napa is going to have you his wash buckets, although Mike's not going to be there because he's going to be in Hawaii.
Please. Excuses, Mike. What the hell?
Why don't you fly back just for Cars and Coffee? Forget the vacation. You know what I'm saying?
What is it going to take? Another McRib? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, that story turned out not to be true. We'll talk about that in a minute. Cars and Coffee, Arrowhead BMW, Saturday, October 26th. Bring your kids. Bring your family. It's going to be a great time at Arrowhead BMW, arrowheadbmw.com, right off the 101 freeway in Glendale at the Beardsley Union Hills exit. The Mitchell Trubisky train. We keep using trains. The Mitchell Trubisky rocket ship is back orbiting the Chicago Bears Earth. Trubisky's back this week. Do you like the Bears?
Yeah, I do, but I don't like them because of Trubisky. I like them because of the defense, and I like them because this will be a colder game outdoor, and that's not where the Saints thrive, in my opinion. And I think this is truly where not having Drew Brees could come back to you, because these are the kind of games where you need leadership. These are the kind of games where you need consistency out of your quarterback. You need that. What is it? What is he? He's in the 70s for a completion percentage. Like, his stats are ridiculous as far as just completing the simple pass and doing his job. In these kind of games as a road team, you have to have that. And I'm not trying to shade Teddy Bridgewater, but I just don't know that we can count on him in this type of a situation. And I know for a fact that I can count on the Bears defense at home to get it done. So
Khalil Mack.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to take the Bears in this game. It really just is a question of, will Mitchell Trubisky make mistakes or will he come out and play well? If he comes out and plays well and does not turn the football over, doesn't throw the bad interception, doesn't, you know, have a strip sack or anything like that, then yeah, I think the Bears win this game, and I think it's somewhat comfortable, probably 7 to 10 points, if all of that happens. But if it doesn't, now we're talking about a really close game.
Well, Mitchell Trubisky being back for the Bears is absolutely critical. I you know, with all due respect to Chase Daniel, I he's just not the dynamic impact player that Trubisky can be with moving his legs and throwing on the run. And my biggest question with you is the defense, and the guy is Leonard Floyd. Leonard Floyd has been a remarkably inconsistent performer. When he plays well, this Bears defense is elite. The problem is Leonard Floyd doesn't often play up to his capabilities.
Right.
And I think that's beginning to impact the Bears, because you're seeing that, you know, look what the Raiders did to Khalil Mack in London. They did not double team Khalil Mack. They triple teamed him. And they made him a non-factor in that game, which is not something that you see often from a guy like Khalil Mack. But they're able to do that because Leonard Floyd's not winning one-on-one battles with a tackle. And with his length and explosiveness, Leonard Floyd has to be able to do that for this Bears team to win.
Should be able to do it.
Yeah, absolutely should be able to do that. And I also think that Matt Nagy has to do a better job of calling plays. I think he's got to get Tariq Cohen more involved in the offense. And I think he, with Mitchell Trubisky, I think he has to take more... he has to pause more and just be, he has got to get Mitchell Trubisky to be okay with the 5-yard dump off, because the next play you're going to take a shot down the middle of the field.
Yeah. And if you take the 5-yard dump off, you're going to be in a better position. You know, if again, this is the old saying, right? Like, get your 5 yards on first down. Don't go necessarily for 50 yards, right? Just be in a good spot. Don't be behind the chains on third down. And if you are, You're going to be chasing it all day, so I completely agree. That's something that they need to focus on.
I would love to see the Bears consistently in 3rd and 3, 3rd and 5.
Exactly.
If you're in 3rd, 8, 9, and 10, you're in trouble, and that, because that's not what this offense is. But having said that, I love the Bears this week. I like them 26-17. The number's 3.5 in favor of the Bears. The over's 38. I like 26-17 Bears. I think it's a win cover and over, and I think this is the week that they fully deploy Mitchell Trubisky. Whether they feel comfortable doing that, whether that's the right thing to do or not, I don't know. But I feel pretty confident that this is the week that they let Mitchell Trubisky really, really go. Because Matt Nagy has said that, you know, he's been a little conservative with the play calling. I think you got to take the reins off. If Trubisky is not the franchise quarterback that you thought he was when you traded up to get him, you need to know that this year, not in 2 years.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's a great point. And for me in this game, I do think it's the first to 20 in this game will win the game. I do think the Bears, don't be surprised if they get to like 27, because I think a defensive touchdown is not out of the question in this game. So I'll go 27-17, 10-point win at home. Good victory. Trubisky plays well, and you're on your way.
By the way, Rail Yards on Twitter is asking about the Bears' ability to handle the Taysom Hill package. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's going to be a big factor in this game.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, the Saints tend to deploy Taysom Hill when they need a moment.
Right.
Right? When they need a real lift.
Lightning in a bottle, bro.
But by the way, they haven't had to have those moments because Teddy Bridgewater's actually been very good. So I think that's going to be a big deal. Michael Thomas is injured. Doesn't look like he's going to play in this game. We'll keep our eye on that. Alvin Kamara is injured and doesn't look like he's going to play. So Michael Thomas is going to have a big game. So it'll be interesting to see how they go about that.
Yeah.
But if the Saints don't have Kamara, I think Taysom Hill gets a lot more usage. His usage goes way up. So I think all those things will be interesting. I'm going to take the Bears to win 26-17. I think the most difficult NFL game of the week, before we get to college football, is the Eagles at the Cowboys. And this is the marquee matchup of the week. Dallas is a 2.5-point home favorite. The number's 49. And the question is, is this the week where the Dallas Cowboys finally get a win against a quality opponent? I'm going to say no. Because, you know what? I think Carson Wentz has a lot to prove. This is going to be the game of the week. Everybody's going to be watching this game. It's in prime time. You feel like Dallas-Philly is that game where it is, you know, you know what's on the line in this game. Yeah, there's huge implications in the division. There's huge implications in both offenses, because I think there's questions out about Carson Wentz. As much as we talk about Dak Prescott, I think there's questions about Carson Wentz as well. And I am more confident in Carson Wentz, and I believe that he's a franchise quarterback. I have never been able to say that about Dak Prescott. I do believe that about Carson Wentz.
Well, I mean, what's the biggest difference? I mean, to me, the biggest difference is we're asking the questions for different reasons, right? With Dak, you're asking the question if he's a franchise quarterback or not because you're not seeing the performance on the field, right? You're seeing it against awful teams like Miami. You're seeing it against awful teams like the Redskins and the Giants.
Yeah.
But you're not seeing it against good teams like the Packers. And so then I look at Carson Wentz and I say, okay, well, yeah, this guy has performed. This guy took them to the postseason but got hurt late in the year, and so Nick Foles had to get the job done, and he did. But we're not asking the question of, is he a franchise quarterback based on his performance? We know he can do it. We're asking the question because can he stay healthy? Can you stay on the football field? Yep. It's great that you can play the game at a high level, but if you're not on the field, who cares?
Your best ability
is your availability. So that's why I say we're asking the question for two different reasons, but either way, we're asking the question, and I'm with you on this one. I am definitely taking Philly in this game.
Yes.
You're in Dallas. It's a big game. You know what's on the line. And you're indoor. And I'm a big subscriber to this idea. When you're playing indoor, the offense should be significantly better. Like, way better. You're indoor. It's a controlled environment. There's no wind, no nothing. It is, you're talking about professionals playing this game at a really high level. So I would expect this to be a shootout of sorts. I would expect this to be a around 30-point game for each team and answering, going back and forth. But again, this leads me to where I always get with Dak Prescott. Will he throw the big interception late in the game to kill their chances at the 2-minute drive?
Will he take the big sack?
Yeah,
will he
exactly?
Will
exactly.
he hesitate?
Yes.
And the bigger issue is, today being Friday, this is a really big day for Amari Cooper, because Amari is not practiced. He is doubtful again. I think there's a lot of questions about whether or not Amari Cooper is going to go in this game. And if Amari Cooper does not go in this game, I don't see any chance for the Cowboys to win it. I'm going to take Philly 31-21. I think they're going to upset Dallas at Jerry World. That's a win, and it's over for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think Jason Garrett, if they lose, if that happens, I think there's a chance Jason Garrett gets fired this week.
Good. Good riddance.
Wow.
It's time.
Good. Good. The Monty Show brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Make sure you get to your local Napa Auto Parts store in Peoria, Glendale, El Mirage, Bell Road in Phoenix, and of course the Scottsdale Air Park. And our good friend Mike Conroy, who again is choosing Hawaii over Carson Coffee next weekend.
Whatever.
But Mike does a great job of being your guy. And I think that's one of the things that's changed about retail. And I know that you don't think much about going into brick and mortar stores, but I also think auto parts and accessories are different than that. And it's why like Mike has invested heavily in you with things like coupons on Yelp. Make sure you download the Yelp app on your phone. Find Napa Auto Parts again in Glendale, Peoria, El Mirage, Bell Road in Phoenix, and the Scottsdale Air Park. Find those five stores on Yelp. Open up the Yelp app. And each one of those stores has a $20 off $100 purchase coupon. You're getting $20 back in your pocket when you go to Napa Auto Parts. That's incredible. Tell him you heard it on the Monty Show, and he's going to give you one of these awesome, Napa racing hats. Chase Elliott, looking pretty good. I like, although Talladega was a mess, but
Dega.
Dega. But I'm telling you, check Mike Conroy out at any of his stores at Napa Auto Parts, and trust me, you're not going to be disappointed. They're really good people to do business with. That's why you do business with the guys at Napa Auto Parts. And there he is. How about that? Napa Mike is on.
Yeah,
he says, happy Friday.
It's about time.
Get your ass out of bed.
What is it?
Conroy.
6:57. Mick's probably been up for like an hour already. Let's go.
Yeah, Mike's going to Hawaii. I think he's vacation Mike Conroy at this point. Well-deserved for Mike and the fam. On Wednesday, I believe they leave for Hawaii. So enjoy that.
Nice.
Let's get to our college football picks because I think there are four big, big games this week. I think the biggest game of the week as far as like implications, man, I really feel like it's ASU in Utah. And I know that I'm a Pac-12 guy and everybody says, oh, you're a Pac-12 homer. Okay, I might be a Pac-12 homer. That's very true. ASU at Utah is a massive game. It's stunning that the Utes are a 14-point favorite. Now, I know that game's at Rice-Eccles in Salt Lake. It is one of the best home field advantages in the Pac-12. It's going to be cold. There's a chance of rain.
So, with all that said, why do you feel like it's stunning then?
14 points is a lot because Herm Edwards and Jaden Daniels are playing some really good football. The 24-7 on HBO this week that featured Arizona State in the Washington State game was spectacular. Herm Edwards and the culture he's built in Tempe, I think he's done a great job.
Right.
He's been absolutely the right hire. Jaden Daniels is playing unbelievable football. But the problem is, it's comeback football. And at some point, when you keep playing from behind and you keep betting on yourself and you keep aiming for these unbelievable comebacks, at some point that comes back to bite you in the ass.
Yep.
And I think this is the week that that's going to happen. It's at Rice-Eccles. It's in Salt Lake City in bad weather, which they have not played in. I've got to take the Utes in this game. I think it's 26-10. They are going to pound ASU, and I think that's a win, cover, and under for Utah.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you that this is not going to be a high-flying performance for ASU. I just think Utah's defense is a different breed of defense, right? Utah is well-known for putting defensive backs and defensive players into the league. And with that said, I think that speaks to their quality on defense. And I think to get to the NFL, obviously you have to be a smart football player in addition to having the physical ability. So when you put that together, that all says, okay, well, their defense is a special defense. They're capable of shutting you down even
yes.
when you're a Cinderella story. Even when, Herm Edwards has this great show covering them and, it's Jaden Daniels and we're all excited, forks up. Listen, I'm just telling you that you don't get to go to Rice-Eccles in the winter and think that you're going to put up like 30 points on this Ute defense. That's not happening.
No.
The only question is this game is how many points the ASU defense is going to allow. Because I agree with you. I don't think Jaden Daniels is putting up 20 in this game. I think the top of the mountain in this game is 14 for ASU. So I am going to take the Utes to win this game. I do think they put up at least 21. So I'll go 21-14 Utah.
There you go. And then Arizona at USC. Folks, do you know the number? Arizona at USC. The over-under in this game is 67.
Love it.
I'm taking the over. Because I think USC in Arizona is going to be explosive. Both of them have shown the ability to score tons of points. Here's the problem. USC's undefeated at home. And Khalil Tate's coming off of a really head-scratching performance where he was not very good at all. And I you can hear I am struggling to say USC's going to drop 41 on Arizona. I think it's going to be 41-35. The Trojans win and they go over.
Yeah, the only thing that really concerns me in this game, because I tend to lean with you, this feels like a USC win. The only thing that truly concerns me is Khalil Tate is capable. We've seen him do it. Of putting up huge yardage individually on his own, both passing and running.
On the road.
So, again, I know it's on grass. It's on the road. It's USC. It's going to be a crazy environment. I'm going to take USC. I don't know about 40 points. I'm much more lean to just short of that. I could easily see it being, 38-31, barn burner type shootout game.
But think about where USC's coming from. They go to South Bend and they lose. Right. So I think they know they need this game. I think they know that this is a very big game for the men of Troy. That's why I say fight on. I think USC is going to win 41-35. They're not going to cover the 7. They're going to go way over the 67, though. This is a win and an over for SC. And then there's Boise State at BYU.
This is disrespect.
I think we've got to talk about BYU real quick. This idea, and again, I was having this conversation on Twitter, and I love my BYU fandom. I do. I think that BYU fans, football fans, are spectacular. I think that they are passionate. I think BYU has one of the best fan bases that nobody recognizes in college football. The idea that firing Kalani Sitake is going to fix what ails this team is complete fallacy. I think it's fantasy land. And I think the problem is you're a 14-point home dog, or a 7-point home dog, excuse me, to Boise. The number's 45.5. I'm not saying that you're going to beat Boise State, because I think Boise State's coming off of a thumping that they put on Hawaii. I think Boise's a really good football team.
Right.
But this is a chance for BYU to make a statement. This is a chance for BYU to stand up and say, we're not this crappy, downtrodden team that everybody's making us out to be. Nobody cares about your injuries. Nobody cares that you're dinged up. Nobody cares that you're having one of the worst seasons in recent memory. Nobody cares that 2020's schedule is one of the most difficult schedules. BYU, it's likely the most difficult schedule that BYU's ever built.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Nope.
This is a game you have to win. Is Kalani Sitake coaching for his job? Not in the immediate, because I don't see Tom Homo firing Kalani Sitake midseason. But I think in the long run, this may be a game where if they fire Kalani Sitake, they say, yeah, remember what happened against Boise? I could see that. I think that'd be a huge mistake. I am team Kalani all day long.
Yeah, well, I just think you're not going to find a good replacement. A coach who's as good as him when it comes to, the relationship with his players. And I'm not saying in the sense of being a player's coach, but more in the sense of living up to the BYU standard, which I think is a dynamic that not a lot of people understand unless you've lived there and you've been close to the team. It's a big deal there. And so I think Kalani does a great job of that. I think Kalani is one hell of a recruiter. He does seemingly get good talent into the program. They just can't seem to put the dots together. And I know BYU fans, you want to be in a conference like desperately. You'll do anything to get into a conference. But
yes.
But even if you're in a conference, look, would you rather be a bottom dweller in the Pac-12 or playing these huge nameplate games as an independent and seeing what you can do? So I don't know. It's a tough conversation. But the point is, I agree with you. Firing Kalani right now isn't the fix. It
almost coordinators, sets you back. You want to talk about his coordinators? We can fire his coordinators. I think the players are playing with passion and heart, and I think they're just being asked to do things they're not capable of, which is going to be a problem this weekend, and that's why you are going to lose to Boise State. 36-24, I think Boise puts it on BYU. It's a win, a cover, and an over. Boise's -7 here. 45.5 is the number. I think this is going to be fun. And yes, I do think BYU's got a chance to win this game, especially if Jaren Hall plays. 36-24, I'm going to take Boise to win the game.
Solid. Yeah, I think you have to take Boise to win the game. I just think you can't right now you can't trust BYU to go and win the game. So yeah, I think you have to go with Boise. I wouldn't be surprised by, again, I know 30 seems like the number, but I wouldn't be surprised by that in this game either.
Finally on the locks, before we get to, El Chapo's kids and China firing Daryl Morey, Oregon at Washington. I think this is one of the most important games of the week. Oregon's minus three at Washington. Oregon's minus three. The number's 49. Washington's a great defensive school. Eason's playing great football. I love Washington in this game. I like Oregon. I like the way they play football. Herbert's a good quarterback. Sorry, you're going to Seattle to Husky Stadium to lose. Washington's going to win 24-23. This is a win. The number's three. They're not going to cover it. I think this is going to be a very close game. I love, love, love the Washington Huskies in this game.
Yeah, so we look at Herbert a little bit differently, I think. I give Herbert a lot of respect. He could have gone to the draft last year. He should have. Clearly, he should have. But he didn't. And now he's a senior. He's clearly playing out of his mind football right now, which is great. And I think that's why they are a favorite going to Washington. Simple as that. And I think you have to give major respect to that offense. And that's why when we did our Pac-12 power rankings, I said they were the best team in the Pac-12 right now. And I do think they're the best team in the Pac-12 right now. And I don't think Washington is going to be able to hold them to 23. But I do think Washington wins the game. I do think Washington gets that stop when they need to get the stop. I just think it's more points. So I will take Washington.
Yeah, I love the Huskies in that game. So those are our locks of the week. A couple other stories we want to get to here on the Monty Show, presented by Arrowhead BMW. Yankees melted down last night, and uncharacteristically so. You were 6-3, and you get an error from DJ LeMahieu, followed by an error by Gleyber Torres. Like, it's really surprising how poorly the Yankees have played in the last two games. Any chance they can come back and win this series now? I don't see how you do down 3-1.
No, it's not even, yeah, you are down 3-1, and that's kind of a surface level reason why you won't win the series, but it goes deeper than that. The reason those errors happen is because you were mentally defeated, in the sense that you knew you were down 6-3, you knew you had to get through these innings, and you knew that you couldn't give up that seventh run. And you end up giving it up because you were rushing. Straight up, the error, who was it playing third base, I think, made the error? Where it goes right under his glove.
Urshela.
Yeah, Urshela. It goes right under his glove on an easy play. That tells me, hey, your thought wasn't, let me get my glove down, just like I have all season long. Your thought was, oh man, I believe it was Altuve is running. I got to get this ball out quick. So that's why I say they're mentally just defeated. They're tired. They've been beaten already. And now, just like you said the other day, right, it's Cole, it's Verlander, it's the power arms coming back around.
It's over.
So, I mean, agreed, it's over. I just think the Astros have outdueled them. It's that simple.
Yeah, I agree with that. What do you make of this? How do I say this? How do I do this calmly? Joe Girardi is going to get hired by the Philadelphia Phillies. And it is looking more and more like the Cubs are going to wind up with somebody probably named David Ross.
It's embarrassing, dude.
Is it embarrassing?
It is. It is. It absolutely is. Because there's not a chance in hell David Ross is qualified to manage a team. There's no way. Tell me the last time David Ross has coached anybody on anything, right? Tell me the last time the guy has taught somebody something about baseball at the major league level, right? You went from being a catcher and everybody's best friend to being an analyst in the booth. And look, I'm typically, when we talk about the Cubs, I'm Mr. Optimistic, but this would be a massive mistake. And this is the reason people like Theo Epstein get fired. When you hire, if they hire, because they haven't.
Because I don't think they're going to hire David Ross.
Well, but if they do, I'm telling you, that's a major problem.
Yeah, I think the chances that they hire a guy named Joe Espada, who is the Astros bench coach, I think that's probably the guy they're going to hire. And I would be okay with that hire for the Cubs. I think the reason that I like Espada so much is he is a fundamental guy. Everywhere he's gone, the base running's gotten better. The Cubs were dead last on outs on the bases last year.
So bad, dude.
They're a bad base running team. And I know that many are disappointed that Joe Maddon's not the manager of the Cubs again. Our good friend Mike Conroy from Napa is...
I think we're all disappointed by it, but it needed to happen.
It was the right move.
Yeah, it needed to happen.
So they were dead last in outs made on the bases. They were one of the worst... I think they were the third worst fielding team in baseball mm-hmm. as far as errors committed. Everywhere a spot is gone, the base running's gotten better, and he is a teacher of infield fundamentals. And I think those things have really plagued this team.
Well, if you think about the 2016 World Series team, they were, in fact, one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yes.
And that was part of
yes.
the reason that they had gotten so much success in the postseason. And I think back to recent times of other teams that have won the World Series. I think about the Royals. They were an outstanding defensive team. They won that World Series on the back
Look at
of
the
their
Astros.
Defense. Yeah, they again, the
pitching
Astros.
And defense.
Yes.
Now, Bregman last night made an error at third. I get it.
Bound to happen.
It's going to happen. Overall, they're a really good defensive team. That play that Correa made to throw out a Yankee at home plate.
I don't remember who. I want to say it was, in fact,
it was
LeMahieu.
DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah, I think it was LeMahieu.
It was unbelievable. This team, the Houston Astros is built on that. He's their bench coach. They're one of the best base running teams in baseball. He's their bench coach. They're one of the best run saved teams in baseball because he's their bench coach.
Yeah.
He's a former Yankee. He worked for the Yankees. He coached the he's the right guy. With all due respect to David Ross, hire David Ross to be his bench coach.
Yes.
Hire David Ross to be, you know, whatever you want David Ross to be, but put some seasoning, put some salt and pepper on him. Put a little, you know, put a little taco seasoning on freaking David Ross. You know, give me some rosemary and thyme on David Ross.
Yes.
He needs to stew. He needs to work a little bit. This
he needs
idea
to marinate.
Yeah, it's this idea that you're going to be able to get Rocco Baldelli. How many Rocco Baldellis are there out there? How many Aaron Boones are there? How many, Coras out there are there? There's not a ton of those guys. And David Ross is not a baseball lifer.
Just because you're young doesn't mean you're good at managing. And again, but I'm being serious here.
Yeah.
I think people legitimately say, oh, well, this guy is just out of the game. And he's, you know, just out of the game in baseball, meaning less than 5 years removed from playing. And he's a good guy. He's respected. Let's make him our manager. Right. But that's not why the Yankees made Aaron Boone their manager. Aaron Boone got that job because he clearly showed that he's capable and has an understanding. It's not just, hey, yeah, you're going to be good in the clubhouse and rah-rah, and yeah, let's do some cool team dress-up events for the team playing. Like, that's not what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about, to your point, it's about fundamentals. It's about actually playing the game, and it would legitimately upset me if they hired David Ross. So I hope that they hire this guy.
Yeah, Josh Lovren on Twitter says Raul Ibanez or Joey Cora would be great as the Cubs manager. Well, you know, Joey Cora has got Chicago ties. Raul Ibanez, I don't think those would be bad names. I think it is. And I agree with Napa Mike, who just said most catchers make good managers. I don't even disagree with that.
I don't disagree, but I also. This has to be the right guy. You can't mess this up. This isn't like signing,
totally
you know,
agree.
Your next shortstop.
You
dude.
Need a teacher of the game in
yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah.
That's what the Cubs need. And David Ross is going to be a good manager, I would guess. But he's not a teacher of the game. I don't need your friend to manage the team.
Make
right?
him your catcher's coach.
By the way, make him your bullpen coach. I would be totally fine. Mark Pryor, now the pitching coach of the Dodgers.
Yeah.
How many years has he been there? Five years now?
More than you think.
I mean, it's one of those things where you have to go through the process, in my opinion. And David Ross is a player's manager, and I think that's the last thing that this team needs is another player's
Agreed.
Manager. I think you need a guy who's not scared to crack the whip on Javi Baez, who is not scared to say to Anthony Rizzo, you got to handle your business in that clubhouse.
Yeah, it's a mentality, dude.
Who, by the way, and there's been some talk about this, you needed somebody to say to Ben Zobrist, maybe it's not the right thing for you to come back to this team. You needed somebody to say that, and Joe Maddon was never going to say that.
Right.
I think those are the kind of things that have to happen. And by the way, it'd be nice if you stop wasting money on bullpen arms that just never come through for you.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of change that has to happen. By the way, did you see that the Cubs' new TV network will be on DirecTV?
Nice.
By the way.
Nice.
So that matters. By the way, can we finish up? talking about El Chapo's kids in Mexico.
Right.
This story's crazy. First of all, do you look at El Chapo as a cultural phenomenon?
No. I look at him as another dude who thought he was a badass, and at the end of the day, got his ass run down, and now he's taking the punishment for it.
Well, he is kind of a badass.
I mean, okay, great. Maybe he is a badass. I'm just telling you, I don't respect guys who live that kind of a life.
Yeah, and El Chapo Guzman, by the way, is likely the most prolific trafficker of drugs in this world's ever seen. Well, his kids are still trafficking drugs, right? So, quick story to end the show today. El Chapo's son, who's got warrants here in the United States for drug trafficking, is chilling in a house in Sinaloa, Mexico. Cops drive down the street. So he freaks out and thinks they're there for him. So, of course, he opens fire on the cops. They get into a huge gun battle, right?
Yep.
And, they call in the National Army, the forces. Everybody's got the house surrounded.
The cavalry.
It's over, right? They've got the house surrounded. It's done.
Yes.
And then the government's like, yeah, let's let him go. Let's all go home. They pull up stakes, they leave, and nobody knows what happened to him. He's not dead, and he's certainly free because his family's like, yeah, he walked out of there. They let him go.
Yeah, I can't believe it. And on one hand, I'm just like, wow, like, you wanted to capture this guy, and then you just let him go. But on the other hand, you made a great point before the show. Like, that is Mexico.
That's
like,
who Mexico
that's
is right now.
Like, that right now. Right now, it's turning into that's who they've always freaking been. I mean, how long is it going to be before you change the way your country is run? And that's why I say,
it's amazing,
for
isn't
all
it?
These people, I've worked in, you know, several different lines of work, and there's always been a consistent theme of, oh, let's go to Mexico. We can drive 3 hours south to see the water.
Well, we have relatives getting married in Mexico this weekend.
Yeah, I'm good. I'll pass, dude. I'll pass. There's not a reason on this earth that I would ever go to Mexico for any reason, and I'm not spending my money in Mexico either. That's not happening.
No.
So I would much rather, if I was getting married, there are a gazillion other places I would rather go than Mexico.
Yeah, and I know that people love going to Cabo.
I mean, what was it that...
The Jimmer on Twitter says Cabo's my favorite vacation spot. Well, as if on cue, I totally get that. Trent on Twitter says only bad things happen in Mexico.
Well, I mean, bad
stay
things,
north of the border.
I mean, bad Truth. Things being your head in a satchel on the side of the road. I mean,
you know,
other than that, you know, what's
that
so bad about
fine.
It, right? So that's why I say, like, especially if you're an American, I don't understand why you would ever go to Mexico. It just, A plus B does not equal C when you go to Mexico.
No, I'm good. I'm totally good. It's amazing. By the way, Marco has sent like 10 messages today asking us why we're not on the radio in Phoenix.
I mean, I can't talk about it. We can't talk about it.
Can't talk about it yet, but we will. I'm going to write a book at some point.
We.
Well, I'm not going to split the royalties with you. You can write your own
book.
That's
fine. Okay.
But, you know, we'll write a book about it. I appreciate everybody who continues to ask us about that. I still get a message a day saying, hey, what's this or what's that?
We will talk about it eventually.
Where are you guys going to be on the radio again? Hey, I appreciate that. Marco has just been very vociferous this morning.
Vociferous, I like that.
Sending me multiple messages about it. You know, who knows? Who knows? Who knows when and where it'll happen, but it'll happen.
It will.
In the meantime, make sure you find us wherever you get your podcasts, whether that is iTunes or Google Play, certainly. But we are now in the Spotify. We are now, we are in iHeartRadio.
Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes. SoundCloud.
Yeah, anywhere you get your podcast, you can just search The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show, is where you find us. But there's been a bunch of messages about why we're not on the Fanatic. Look, it's cool, man. It's cool. Wildcat Harvey says the Fanatic's dead to me. Ah, come on.
No comment.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
You're here. What's the problem?
Yeah, you got your morning fix of the Monty Show, presented by Arrowhead BMW, arrowheadbmw.com. You can also say hello to our good friends at Napa Auto Parts. Mike Conroy, Napa Mike, says, cool, Wildcat. Okay, you know. You can find Mike in El Mirage, Glendale, Peoria, Bell Road in Phoenix, and in the Scottsdale Air Park. Tell him you heard it on the Monty Show. He will hook you up. With Napa. Okay, man.
Stop.
No, stop trying to bait me into it. I'm not doing it. But seriously, subscribe to our podcast. That way you can hear the whole show. It'll be delivered every day to your phone. You just got to hit play on The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Have a great weekend. Until Monday, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.